All right, here we are again.
Live
and doing the things, making sure all of the audio is working. We are apparently currently streaming on both YouTube and Twitch. Let's verify this real quick. Where is it? Right here. Is it working? It is apparently working. That's pretty awesome. I couldn't get the Rumble stream to work for some reason, so we're only on the two platforms, but we're on the two platforms. So that is definitely something to write home about. It works. ATEM multi-stream is a bit of a godsend. I'll have to figure out what's going on with Rumble. Might have to redo the RTMP every time you stream with Rumble, which is a little ridiculous. They have a beta test for static stream keys, but it apparently just doesn't work, because that was one of the issues we had a couple weeks ago when we were streaming through Rumble. Is that it just the static key didn't work, and the studio situation. My dog is losing his mind, and it's kind of adorable. Yeah, he almost knocked down our Christmas tree. Yes, my Christmas tree is still up. Yes, it is. So we're doing a couple of different things this time. It's quiet. Too quiet. Yeah, whatever. I have to get back into the proper window. There we go. We're gonna start off by talking about Batman, and then we are moving into regular news, and then I think we're going to end the news section with another kind of a breakdown of a top 10 films of 2024. We did the top 100 or top 20 or whatever songs of 2024 a couple weeks ago. Well, we are going to be doing top 10 films, this time as according to Bounding Into Comics. So that'll be fun. But thank you for joining, everyone who is. Looks like chat is populating still. Very interesting that this is working just like I wanted it to. Not going to lie, fully anticipated more technical difficulties this week. And really didn't run into them. So I guess that's a good thing, right? I guess I should have the vertical recording. All right. Let us go to do the things. So there has been some stuff going on with the whole Pattinson situation. So let's kind of what I know, because I haven't read this article yet. Kind of like how I do reactions. I'll read the headline and that'll be fun to talk about, and then we'll get it queued up. And sometimes it works off and sometimes it doesn't, or it works out rather. But TLDR of what I know about the situation as it stands. The Robert Pattinson Batman, and this has not been a secret the whole time. Matt Reeves and Robert Pattinson, their Batman is not in the DCU. It is an Elseworlds story as far as the movies go. I didn't remember Muschietti being the director for the proper DCU Batman movie, but it's kind of irrelevant. James Gunn has said that there will be a different Batman in the DCU. In recent weeks, people have been rumor-mongering that is going to change, that James Gunn has seen the success of Matt Reeves and Robert Pattinson's movie and the hype for the next movie, and which has been pushed back to 2026 now. So he's seen the success of that and how the fans are really enjoying it, and wants to adapt it or change the plan, I guess is probably more appropriate, so that Pattinson is in the DCU, and that is the Batman for the DCU proper. Well, it would seem that Andy Muschietti has taken issue with this, and that is where this article picks up. We will very likely be going down some rabbit holes with this one because I feel like this is pretty big. I already know one rabbit hole we're going to be touching on, and that is the Creature Commandos episode that has a silhouette of Batman in it. I just watched one where we saw Batman impaled on a stake. Four episodes deep, I think, into Creature Commandos. So we'll touch on that because there's a big rumor around the silhouette from a cartoon. Yeah, because everyone looks exactly like they do in the real world as they're represented in a cartoon, especially when it comes to superhero movies. Oh, man. All right. So let's get into this article from Cosmic Book News, because that is where I start all of my research for even the regular research episodes. This is where I start my research because the guy who runs this, I can't think of his name right now. He also runs the trash one. What was it called? I have it linked on the Twitter. It's like my pinned tweet. Is it just in bookmarks? I think it might just be in bookmarks. No. Where did it go? I'll find it because it deserves tools. It definitely deserves traffic because, like, it's legit. Whatever. Whatever, man. We'll find it, though. So, let's start with this article. Oh, the guy who runs the place. I was going to go look at it. McGloin. Matt McGloin is the guy who runs Cosmic Book and the movie review site. So, Andy Muschietti, the title, Andy Muschietti fires back. His Batman is DCU, separate from Robert Pattinson and Matt Reeves. Okie dokie. So, it sounds like James Gunn has created a big mess at DC, and now Andy Muschietti fires back and says his Batman is the DCU Dark Knight and separate from the Robert Pattinson and Matt Reeves universe. The backstory. So what happened is when James Gunn first announced the DCU, Andy Muschietti was announced on Brave and Bold, which is going to be our first introduction to Batman, featuring Batman and his son Damian Wayne. When James Gunn said Brave and the Bold wasn't ready, insinuating he wasn't happy with it, rumors came out that Gunn wanted Robert Pattinson. Oh, there were also, we're going to go down some rabbit holes. There were also rumors based on what Matt Reeves said at the whatever awards show just happened. I don't know. The Golden Globes. Matt Reeves said something on the red carpet about how he doesn't know what the future holds, and he was kind of being really vague, and it sounded like conversations were had as to what it would take to adapt his Batman into the DCU, or adopt, or whatever word I'm looking for there. But it didn't sound like he was super keen on it, but was still trying to be diplomatic. At least that's how I read the tone in his voice when I watched the video. Or when the video was played for me, because I watched it. It was at the gym. Good Lord. Den of Nerds. I was watching Josh over at Den of Nerds break it down. And I feel like his take was pretty similar to my take, in that he thinks that maybe there have been conversations, but it's not really going to be a thing. And here we are talking about this news article. So back to the news article at hand. Gunn confirmed it had been discussed. See, there we are. Following that, in a recent interview, Andy Muschietti said The Brave and the Bold has been postponed, and he's working on a different movie. Then it was announced that Matt Reeves and Robert Pattinson's The Batman Part 2 has been delayed yet again, this time another year. Oh, by 20 to 27. I don't remember seeing that, but I've also not been super on it because we're in the off season, so I'm more focused on behind-the-scenes stuff. So interesting, it got bumped back to 2027. Obviously, putting all the above together, it was then speculated the reason for the postponement and delay was possibly syncing Matt Reeves' Batman with Gunn's DCU and David Cornsweet's Superman. If that happens, it's assumed Brave and Bold won't happen, and Andy Muschietti won't be directing. Matt Reeves appeared at Golden Globes on Sunday and was asked about, was asked about his Batman being part of the DCU. Reeves seemed against the idea, but open to it. Yeah, I can see how that was. That's the read. We can guess Reeves at least wants to wait until July to see if Gunn's Superman is a success. I really don't think that's what he's doing. I really think Matt Reeves wants to get his whatever trilogy or whatever, however many movies he wants to make. He wants to get that series of movies made. And Robert Pattinson also, I mean, he's an actor. He lives in Hollywood. Like, sure, he's going to just say yes to money because we saw even Joaquin Phoenix will bend to the right dollar amount. But we're still going to go on the assumption that he only wants to do this for however long he's contractually obligated to do it, because we heard about all the stuff from behind the scenes on the first movie, how he didn't want to work out and he had a different vision for how his Batman was going to look on screen and blah, 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 all of the drama. So it sounds like Reeves wants to do his epic story. Pattinson wants to cash out. I don't see either of those two very key players signing on to join the DCU. It just doesn't make sense. So the article continues. Matt Reeves' Batman, not part of the DCU, says Muschietti. Now, just yesterday, this article was written last week. So just yesterday, being a week ago, Andy Muschietti did another interview where he said he's still involved with Brave and the Bold. Muschietti actually said the reason for Brave and the Bold being postponed is that it doesn't get released, so that it doesn't get released at the same time as Matt Reeves' Batman Part 2. Here's what Muschietti told Radio TU as translated by, I'm assuming, Cosmic Book. There is a Batman that, as everyone knows, will belong in the new DCU. Matt Reeves' Batman is pretty clearly not part of this new universe. However, Warner and DC are continuing with the second part of Reeves' Batman. The second part, as everyone knows, has also been delayed to 2027 or something like that. Brave and the Bold will take some time before it comes out. It would be absurd to release two Batman movies at the same time. What DC is doing is working on a plan so that the two movies don't overlap. As for my participation in the movie, for now, there are good intentions. There are intentions. They want me to do it. I want to do it. I want to make the movie. Interesting. All right. So, I mean, that touches on just about everything. But let me see if I can find. I'll do it off stream. I'm going to see if I can find that image, because come on, go faster, let's get there faster, shall we? The image from Creature Commandos, we'll just Google it, I guess. Oh shush, I can spell. That shows the silhouette of Batman. Batman in Creature Commandos. There we go. All right. So let's pull this up. New tab. Paste. So this silhouette, hopefully this one's big enough. Open image. Where are you? Image in new tab. Oh, bite me. There we go. That's a big one. So this image of Batman as seen... Oops, that's not what I wanted either. Go away.
What'd you say, pup?
I didn't hear it. So this image of Batman, this silhouette, if you will, noticeably larger than the way Robert Pattinson was presented on screen in the Pattinson movies. The rumor is that because of the size of this guy, of this art. Hello, Chris. Glad you could join us, bud. Because of the way this Batman is drawn, that obviously this couldn't be the same Batman as Robert Pattinson. And yes, I agree, it's not going to be the same Batman as Robert Pattinson, but it still could be. This isn't definitive for any reason. If you watch Creature Commandos, the lady doing the voice of the bride doesn't look like that in real life either. It's just an absolutely ridiculous conclusion to draw if your whole idea is, well, we're trying to prove or disprove who's going to be playing Batman in the live-action version of the character in this new universe that they've created. Like, that's just absolutely absurd. There was something else I wanted to throw into this segment. But, like, seriously, that's absolutely ridiculous. I think we covered everything because we talked about Reeves. Yeah. I think we covered everything. So, yeah. We will be seeing the Pattinson movies conclude very likely with the third one. I don't think I've heard any rumblings that it's going to go beyond three. And then between two and three is when it sounds like the Muschietti Batman, a.k.a. Brave and Bold, will be coming out into theaters and... that will be the proper DCU Batman. We are going to meet this Batman as he is well into his career because the Brave and the Bold story, which they're going to borrow from, obviously they're not just retelling the Brave and the Bold, but the story in every instance I'm aware of anyway, takes place very well into Batman's career as a crime fighter, as a vigilante, if you will. So... we're going to see a very well-established Batman. We're going to see a very dark Gotham. We're going to be meeting Damian Wayne at the age of 11 is when it is in the comic books, I'm pretty sure. Though I will not be surprised to find out that they are going to age Damian up quite a bit. but also the implication of Damian Wayne means we're probably going to get some at least reference, probably an actor cast in the role of Talia al Ghul. And I think those are the only major implications that we can. So either way, Pattinson doesn't have the figure and doesn't want to build the figure to be Batman in mid-career effectively. And so like that in and of itself, if the guy doesn't want to play that, then that's not going to be the guy that they choose. Like that's, I don't understand why this is such a big deal, but apparently this is a huge deal. And Matt Reeves, is going to make fantastic movies. Like, I really dug the first one. I really hope the second one steps it up even more. And the third one just completely knocks it out of the park. Muschietti, I have some reservations because I saw The Flash. Also, his version of It was a little questionable by the end. Like, there's some very strange directorial choices in chapters 1 and 2. I think that... have me a little trepidatious as to him being the guy in charge of Batman in the DCU, at least to start. I mean, there's no guarantee he's going to continue directing Batman movies, but he's directing the first Batman movie. So that is what we got for the Batman situation. Let's get some more news, shall we? Let's close this guy. We're moving over to... oh, this is one that I was just listening to Josh talk about at the gym this evening, actually, before we came home and I started setting up the stream. World War Hulk. This is huge. I've actually... when I was setting up last week, I think I saw rumblings of this then, but we didn't talk about it in last week's stream because last week's stream was not necessarily a news stream. But yeah, World War Hulk is apparently getting adapted. Now, again, we're going to read this, and there's a little bit of reservation here because some of these details seem a little bit too far out there, but we'll get there. Assuming that the Cosmic Matt at Cosmic Book has the same information that Josh at Den of Nerds has. So yeah, let's get into World War Hulk. Rumors are again swirling that Kevin Feige and Marvel Studios are thinking of a World War Hulk movie. I just lost my thing. There we go. What does the rumor say? The latest rumor comes via World of Real. Yes, that is the same source that Josh was quoting in his most recent video, who posted a few days ago that while things aren't considered official, the plan is to film World War Hulk later this year. And then I think, and we're probably going to get into this, but I think there is a February release date between Doomsday and Secret Wars. So that February release date between those two movies is not assigned a movie just yet. And so the rumor goes on to say that the World War Hulk movie, which will be, they'll plant the seeds in the new Cap movie that's coming out this year. And Captain America, and then they'll set up a little bit of the early feeding structure into a World War Hulk with the Thunderbolts movie that comes also later this year, I'm pretty sure. I forget the exact release date on that one. And then by the time we hit Avengers Doomsday, that's when we'll be full on ready for World War Hulk, and then we'll get World War Hulk, which will be one of the lanes feeding into Avengers Secret Wars. So all very comic booky and interwoven, and if true, really, really cool. But let's continue with the article, shall we? It is claimed Mark Ruffalo will be back and that Captain America Brave New World will set up World War Hulk. See, there we go. In the MCU. It's further said that Thunderbolts will connect. See, I could have just continued reading. Thunderbolts will connect things leading to the MCU's first solo Hulk movie. It's actually not confirmed that Ruffalo or the Hulk appears in either Captain America or Thunderbolts, so it's unclear how those flicks will be connecting the Hulk. But, of course, Harrison Ford is playing Red Hulk, but Ford isn't committed for Thunderbolts or any additional MCU appearances. Presumably, they're going to be killing Thaddeus Ross. Site also says, the site being World of Real, also says that Feige has reached out to numerous directors to helm World War Hulk, including George Miller, who actually has interest in reteaming with Chris Hemsworth on Thor 5. It was Chris Hemsworth who got the meeting. Yeah, this paragraph continues on. Says the site claims that Hemsworth set up the meeting between Miller and Feige, as Hemsworth worked with Miller recently on Furiosa. World War Hulk rumors. Rumor from last year said that World War Hulk, that is such a tongue twister, film would unite several street heroes against a Hulk-level threat and protect, and the project could appear before Avengers Secret Wars. As I, being Matt here at Cosmic Book, as I went over there, that sounds like a huge disappointment. I'm a big fan of the Hulk comics and have all of the World War Hulk issues. Feige and Ruffalo definitely dropped the ball when it comes to the Hulk in the MCU. Yeah, as soon as I saw the trailer of Hulk on the planet, the Jeff Goldblum planet, in Ragnarok, I thought that's when they were planting the seed for World War Hulk, because that would make a lot of sense. And then I saw Ragnarok, and that is not what they were doing. that was such a disappointment. As like that movie, as far as Hulk is concerned, like I dug Ragnarok to a certain degree. I think that I don't really like Taika Waititi's style necessarily, but that was a fine movie. But, like, that was the worst decision to make with the Hulk. Like, leave him marooned for a while. let's stop hearing Mark Ruffalo in the news. Like, stop giving him a reason to be relevant for a little while so he can, you know, get his ego in check. And then bring him back with this amazing, epic Hulk story. And there's even, like, the Maestro Hulk is rumored here, but I don't know. We might get into that here, too. Let's just continue reading, shall we? As I went over then, that sounds like a huge disappointment. Big fan, blah, blah, we just read that. So in the comics, a group of Marvel heroes ascend the Hulk to space, which leads to Planet Hulk, which is not goofy at all. And I will concur with Matt here. It is absolutely one of the coolest Hulk stories. Start with Planet Hulk, read all the way through World War Hulk. It's pretty epic. While on Sakaar, it's such a dangerous planet that the Hulk can't turn into Banner. A new personality emerges, and it's the most badass version of the Hulk ever. Ends up falling in love with... I have not heard this person's name out loud, so I'm going to not say it correctly, and I apologize. Kyera. Long story short, she gets destroyed by the same ship the Marvel heroes sent the Hulk away in. Hulk gets pissed... along with his war bond, heads back to Earth for revenge and to mess stuff up, which he does. Again, awesome story. There is an epic shot, because Hulk doesn't just ride in a ship. He rides on the nose of one of the ships going back to Earth because he's so pissed off he can't be inside. Oh, man, it is legitimately awesome. Instead, Feige's goofy-ass MCU made a joke of the Planet Hulk in Thor Ragnarok. Then we saw Ruffalo's goofy-ass Hulk return in She-Hulk, yes, oh my god, along with his goofy-ass son, Scar. In the comics, the son of Hulk is just as badass as his dad. Honestly, I don't know how they're going to do World War Hulk justice in the MCU. This is all conjecture that the author wanted to inject because... MCU. How the heck did Hulk even have a son in the MCU? He had the brain of a child, went on Sakaar. Oh, boy. He makes absolutely zero sense. He's going to fight street-level heroes. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. I was so preoccupied with the rest of why the She-Hulk series was no good that I didn't even think, like, where did this son come from? There's no reference as to who it is. Dude, that would be an epic interpretation of World War Hulk. Make it into a horror movie. That would be insane. Like, if we get a World War Hulk movie, that means they have to do some sort of Land of Hulk preamble, right? So like the first act of the movie could be the Land of Hulk. So like that being the setup, and then the story arcs in some sort of horror situation where like he just messes everything up and then comes back to Earth and then exacts revenge because he's pissed off. Like, yeah, that would be pretty epic. I mean, that's going to be a lot. There's so much setup required there. I really don't see that happening, but that would be really, really cool. I totally agree. So, yeah, that is our Hulk rumor. Let's get into, what did I have next? Recasting. We actually have another, I don't know if I actually found this one. Give me 2 seconds, guys. Give me 2 seconds. I have to see, because there's another recasting. Obviously, we're talking about Black Panther. Star Wars recasting. Recasting. I can't think of the character's name. Baylan. Where is this? Yeah, there it is. No, that's not it. Whatever, that's enough information. We can at least have the conversation. Let's read this article, and then we'll get into the Baylan recasting. So, Black Panther. Rumor is we're getting a recast Black Panther. It is claimed that Marvel is finally going to be recasting Black Panther for Avengers Doomsday, Avengers Secret Wars, and Black Panther 3, which is confirmed to be in development. I believe we talked about that in a previous live stream, or at least mentioned it. I could be wrong, though. Rumor comes via Jeff Snyder, who says Marvel is looking to recast its Black Panther hero T'Challa ahead of the two Avengers movies and Ryan Coogler's Black Panther 3. So presumably they're going to be pulling a T'Challa from a different universe. What happened with Black Panther? Chadwick Boseman debuted Black Panther. We all know he had cancer and he died. Very sad. Really sucks. I really, really dug him in that role. He was fantastic. So it sucks. Marvel went ahead with Black Panther Wakanda Forever and Letitia Wright as Shuri as the new Black Panther. The film failed to impress and made well under $1 billion, which is a weird like benchmark that we must hit now in order to consider a superhero movie a success, but here we are. Fans have petitioned Marvel to recast. Chadwick Boseman, they're going to talk about his passing. What about recasting? Feige says not recasting. Following the death of Boseman, Feige said they will not be recasting when he announced Black Panther 2 back in December of 2020. Then it has the quote, because they're honoring Boseman's memory, insanely talented, blah, blah, blah. Feige says it's too soon to recast. Next, he says, with Black Panther 2 greenlit, fans are wondering if Marvel would ever recast. However, back in September of 2022, Kevin Feige, I think that was supposed to be Black Panther 3 right there, Kevin Feige reiterated it was too soon. As he told Empire Magazine at the time, it just felt like it was too much too soon to recast. Stanley always said that Marvel represents the world outside your window, and he... and we had talked about how, and as extraordinary and fantastical as our characters and stories are, there's a relatable and human element to everything we do. The world is processing the loss of Chad, and Ryan poured that into the story. The conversations were entirely about, yes, what do we do next, and how could the legacy of Chadwick and what he had done to help Wakanda and the Black Panther become these incredible, aspirational, iconic ideas continue? That's what it was all about. Marvel producer. Oh, that's right. I remember this one too. Producer Nate Moore, who recently announced exiting Marvel, actually said fans wouldn't see T'Challa in the MCU ever again following the death of Chadwick Boseman. Goes on to quote him. Boseman's family supports recasting of Black Panther. This is where this gets really, really interesting. However, back in December of 2021, responding to a petition from fans to recast, Boseman's brother did support the recasting of Black Panther. Derek Boseman told TMZ at the time that Chadwick would want the role recast. It tells TMZ, yes, he does think T'Challa needs to live on in the Black Panther franchise, and if that means tapping another actor to portray the King of Wakanda, the role Chadwick made famous and legendary, then so be it. And then much more there. Black Panther 3, what we know so far is that we have cast Denzel Washington and Ryan Coogler is back to direct. That's basically it. But we are still a little ways out. So, yeah, that it kind of makes sense. But so the other recasting, I'm going to have to refresh my memory on the it's Baylan. But who is the actor's name? Let's pull it up on Wikipedia. Wikipedia. Star Wars Ahsoka. There it is. So the actor who plays Baylan, where is it? Ray Stevenson. What? It's in the wiki already. Ooh. Interesting. So Ray Stevenson, again, tragically passed, played Baylan in season one. And we are, I should pull this up so that you guys can see it too. I apologize. Let's do that. Where are we? We're going here. We're going there. We're doing the thing. So, hi, Side Note Gaming. What's going on? Welcome to the conversation. So, we are looking at an interesting recasting now. I didn't realize this was to the point where it was confirmed, but here we are. So, we have... I just lost my place. Where the hell are we? Ray Stevenson, right there. That's Ray Stevenson, the man, the myth, the legend. Ray Stevenson played him in season one, Baylan Skull. Apparently, Rory McCann is going to be playing him in season two. Now, that name might not sound familiar because you know him much more readily as the Hound from Game of Thrones. He played Sandor Clegane, and was one of the best reasons, one of the only reasons to watch the last two seasons, but one of the best reasons to watch the entire series, because his character arc is so compelling. It was one of the only things I feel like they really, really did well throughout the entire life of that series. He's also a pretty damn good actor, so super stoked for this. Let's see if I can find it. There is a, someone made a comparison shot. Let's see if I can find it. Of the two of them together. So I'm going to do a little copy paste because I suck with people's names. Rory McCann. Oop, come on. Copy. Ahsoka. And I already forgot Ray Stevenson. ADD is fun. Yes, Ray Stevenson. Ray Stevenson. Come on, fingers follow. Images. There we go. That's what we want. THR. Oh, the Hollywood Reporter is. Ooh, this is a lot bigger than I thought it was. This is pretty dope. Let's go. Let's go, let's go. We're going to read this article now because yes, please. Game of Thrones actor Rory McCann replacing late Ray Stevenson for Ahsoka Season 2. There is a picture somewhere. Come on, render the damn picture. Oh, good Lord. Really? Do I really have to do this? Let's do it. All right, that's fine. That right there. This is a really, really cool comparison between these two gentlemen. Look at this. Like, that is a... They could potentially be related, these two gentlemen. And so the fact that they're going to be playing the same character is pretty damn cool. Like, I'm going to say really damn cool. So, all right, sorry. We're going to read the article, I promise. Scottish actor Rory McCann, best known for playing Burly Brute the Hound on HBO's Game of Thrones, will replace late actor Ray Stevenson for a second season of Star Wars show Ahsoka. This is from 5 days ago. Wow, I'm really out of the loop right now. Stevenson played the hulking former Jedi known as Baylan Skoll in the Disney Plus series. He did an amazing job, too. I really, really liked that character so, so much, largely because of his performance. He died after a brief illness in May 2023, 3 months before the series premiered. Actor was a fan favorite thanks to his resonant voice, humor, and roles in Punisher Warzone, Thor movies, and TV's Rome. Ahsoka stars Rosario Dawson, blah, blah, blah. It's unclear when the new season is to begin shooting or who will be directing. Dave Filoni was the showrunner of season one and is returning in the same capacity for season two. McCann was recently on the big screen in Gladiator 2. His other credits include Edgar Wright's Hot Fuzz, Return of Xander Cage. Good Lord, the fluff at the end of articles these days is mind-numbing. So that is super, super awesome. I am totally here for this. All right. So let's do this. Let's continue on. We have a little bit of Warhammer update. Warhammer 40K series with... Oh, I hate the formatting that they have. Series with Henry Cavill officially enters development at Amazon. We've talked about this a number of times on the channel proper as well. Let's read the update. Followers of the Emperor rejoice. While heretics drown in sorrow for the Emperor, it has been confirmed that Amazon MGM Studios has officially moved forward with the Warhammer 40K television series, featuring Henry Cavill as its star and executive producer. Marks a major step in the creation of a cinematic universe based on the Games Workshop's legendary tabletop game. Cavill, a lifelong fan of the franchise, is set to bring the sprawling universe to life, combining his passion for the lore and with his acting and production expertise. But there are some worries. Fans such as myself, being the author of this article, who is listed somewhere, surely. Jorge Arenas. Where did I leave off? But there are some worries, fans as myself. I can't help but think of Cavill's experience with Netflix's Witcher and wonder, will he be screwed again by bad showrunners? The timing of this announcement is quite interesting because it marks exactly 2 years after Amazon acquired the global rights to Warhammer 40K in December of 2022. When was this article written? December 10th. This is a month old? Wow, seriously? This is what happens when we're in the off season. I just don't read the news very much. According to Deadline, Mini Writers Room was convened to establish a creative vision for the universe based on the material developed. Amazon opted to proceed with a TV series as the franchise's inaugural project. While no showrunner has been officially named, negotiations are reportedly underway. According to Games Workshop's July financial report, Amazon and the company have until December, the end of last month, to agree on creative guidelines for the films and television series to be developed by Amazon to secure the rights for the future installments. And with this announcement, it seems that those involved made it just in time for Cap. Oh, I see. The deadline that they had was December, so in December they made the announcement. So they made it. They hit the deadline. There we go. For Cavill, the project is a dream come true. Yeah, all right. The rest of us, I feel like, is just going to be fluff. So that's pretty awesome. I think we're on to this big list. And then I want to... we're going to talk a little bit about stuff that just happened. Because we're in the off-season, everything kind of gets mashed into one show. So we have some That Just Happened stuff to talk about. Specifically, we're going to be talking about... movies that I have watched over the course of the last 2 weeks, because there's some stuff to talk about. I guess more like 3 weeks, because we didn't talk about Nosferatu either. So we're going to get to that. Nosferatu, the Substance, and Quiet Place Day One, very specifically. All right, so before we get to that, though, let's do this whole thing with the top... What is it? The top 10 movies according to Bounding Into Comics. Top 10 movies of 2024. So it's that time of year again. Blah, 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 blah. First up is Remember Me. I did not see that movie. How did I not see that movie? Character-driven film, drama, stage, and thriller. You're unfamiliar with those few of those movies, I suggest you check them out. Okay, so Remember Me is one to check out, I guess. Boy Kills World, I did not see that one, but I'm going to, because that looks like so much fun. Bill Skarsgård just kind of had a great 2024, I think. Unsung Hero, I've not even heard of that movie. I thought we were going to be able to talk a lot, but no. Sing Sing, A24, so of course that's going to be good. Sweet Dream, really? A Johnny Knoxville movie made it into the best of 2024? I've really... now we're to the point where I'm questioning. Oh, these are honorable mentions. Okay. These are honorable mentions. Fair enough. All right, so Your Monster. Yep, starting off in the same place we started off before. I have not seen this movie. Starting off the past year, number 10 film, Your Monster. Actress Melissa Barrera is Hollywood puzzle piece that no one seems to be able to solve. Remove Barrera from a major studio-backed film, and you find that she has put out a very solid filmography over the last couple of years. Your Monster is a story about a young stage actress named Laura Franco. After receiving an emotionally crippling cancer diagnosis, Laura is dumped by her playwright boyfriend, Jacob. Laura is emotionally devastated and proceeds to spend the next few weeks crying in her apartment while distancing herself from the world. Bible verse that says, "It's better to dwell in the wilderness than with contentious and angry woman." Your Monster is a perfect representation of that very problem, as the film is an emotional roller coaster of the life of a woman who can't seem to pull it together. Huh. All right. Sure. Trailer for Your Monster. Great. Late bloomers. Oh, this one I remember seeing trailers for because it's Karen Gillan. I was not motivated to see the movie based on any of those trailers, so I'm very intrigued why this is actually in their top 10. Millennials get a bad rap for a good reason because despite growing up, many still refuse to grow up. Karen Gillan, known for her roles in Guardians of the Galaxy and Jumanji franchise, is one of the few actresses in Hollywood who still reaches out to do similar films. Oh, smaller films. I can read. Late Bloomers is the story of a 30-year-old woman named Louise who is doing nothing, who has nothing going for her, life at all. After a pathetic display of trying to get back with her boyfriend, she ends up breaking her hip, causing her to go to rehabilitation because most people who are rehabbing their hips are twice her age. She's forced to get to know a stubborn, mean, old Polish woman named... Oh, that does sound interesting. I really... Okay, sure. Ordinary Angels, didn't hear of it. That's What's-His-Toes, though, from Reacher and Aquaman. Why can't I think of his name? Alan Richson, there you go. Plays Ed is struggling to raise two daughters all on his own, one of whom is desperate need of a liver transplant. Oh, it's another really sad tearjerker drama. Oh, good Lord. September 5th? The hell is that? Oh, it's the Olympics thing. 72 Summer Olympics was one of the biggest displays of political incompetence in the world has ever seen. For those who aren't old enough to remember the real-life story, it happened during the stages of the Summer Games. A group of Palestinian terrorists kidnapped the Israeli Olympic team and demanded a path of escape while threatening to kill the hostages. So that's what this movie is based on. That one does look pretty good. The Bike Riders at number 6. Good choice. This is such a unique, interesting movie. I did see this. When did it come out? I feel like it was November. Does it say? I don't think it says. But yeah, this is such an interesting... So Tom Hardy is always a win. I'm starting to learn that Austin Butler is also kind of always a win. And then you've got Norman Reedus... This is Norman Reedus. In spite of how it looks, that is absolutely Norman Reedus. A really, really kind of quirky drama about a real-life bike club that started back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, apparently. Film. Time warp back to American culture in the Midwest during the 60s and 70s, and the cinematography of the movie does a great job of making the setting look like another world when compared to today. It absolutely does. The cinematography in this movie is beautiful. Tom Hardy plays Johnny, the president and founder of the club, who got the idea from watching old 50s television show of creating a biker gang of his own. Early promotion of the movie, blah, blah, blah. That is legitimate. I would say if you haven't seen Bike Riders, watch it. It's on Prime right now, I do believe. Hijack 1971, again, another movie that I did not see. To be fair, these guys have a weird, weird taste in movies. Like, reading some of their reviews, it's like, I don't know. Skipping that one. Kill, it looks like it's an Indian movie. Yeah, India has given us blah, blah, blah. That's why I didn't see it. Juror number 2. What, with J.K. Simmons? What is this? Everybody hates jury duty, but imagine being part of a trial for a crime that you committed. Oh, yeah. Okay, I do remember the trailers for this. Nicholas Holt plays Justin Kemp, a recovering alcoholic who just got called in for jury duty, the case about a woman who got into a public altercation with a boyfriend at a bar and afterward was found murdered and left in a ditch near a bridge where the altercation took place. Huh, interesting. Officer Black Belt. This one looks like it's from Korea. When it comes to genre of black comedy, the way that Hollywood presents the genre is by making light of horrific situations such as death and sexual assault. In Hollywood's eyes, comedy comes from making light of serious situations to the point it feels like they're going out of their way to either belittle them or reveal their evil nature. Officer Black Belt is the story of a young man named Lee Jung-do, who helps a probation officer named Kim Sun-min capture a violent offender in the neighborhood, and Kim decides to recommend Lee for a job within the force. Officer Black Belt is a brilliant film. Interesting. Buddy cop thing from South Korea, perhaps. Harbin, there's so many. Were there no good American movies or what? Yeah, that was kind of a bust. I kind of half anticipated that was going to be the case, but yeah. So feel free to chime in, Chris, whenever. But so Nosferatu, if you haven't heard the hype at this point, I feel like you probably live under a rock. Nosferatu came out on Christmas Day. I saw it on Christmas Day. I was blown away on Christmas Day. Comparing this to Dracula, right? Comparing this to the Keanu Reeves, oh my God, I'm going to blank all of the names of the actors in Dracula. Winona Ryder. I can see all their faces. Oh, good Lord. Dracula 90. Where is it? Not 2000. Dracula Untold, Dracula the TV series. All of these are not terrible, but not what I'm looking for. Oh, because it's Bram Stoker's Dracula, isn't it? Bram. There it is. 92 film. That's what we're looking for. Cast list, because my brain sucks. Gary Oldman, Winona Ryder, Anthony Hopkins. Those were the two names I was looking for. Anthony Hopkins and Gary Oldman. Comparing Nosferatu to Dracula, you have to, because that's where Nosferatu comes from. But as far as like movie making goes, they tell a very similar story, but they feel worlds apart. And I think that the imagery of Nosferatu is a large part of what really sets it apart from Dracula. But also, like, Nicholas, everybody's talking about Bill Skarsgård as Orlok and Lily Rose Depp as whatever the hell. We'll pull that one up now that we're not talking about this one. Nosferatu. This one, Robert Eggers. Lily Rose Depp's character's name was something. Ellen Hutter. So everyone's talking about Bill Skarsgård because Count Orlok is frightening in weird ways. Lily Rose Depp because she's Johnny Depp's daughter and she's kind of the most pivotal character in the story, though I don't know that she gets really a story arc, which is interesting. And I mean, there's been a bit of mention of Willem Dafoe as Albin, the professor, because his character is so weird. But really, I feel like not enough is being said about Nicholas Holt's performance. Jeremy John's review of the movie cast a little bit of light on Nicholas Holt's performance, because the scene where he meets Count Orlok, he just kind of runs this crazy gamut of emotions and you see it all play out on his face. He says the same thing, Jeremy Johns does, says the same thing about Lily Rose Depp, in that you see this crazy breadth of ability to display emotions through their face and their physicality. I really don't think Lily Rose's performance illustrates it nearly as well, not even half as well as Nicholas Holt's performance. Lily Rose did fine. I feel like there were a little bit of issues with accent consistency on her part. Emma Corrin is in it too. Totally forgot she was cast in this. For those that don't know why that name is significant, she plays Professor Xavier's sister in the Wolverine and Deadpool movie. Also totally forgot that Aaron Taylor-Johnson was in this, because apparently Aaron Taylor-Johnson is in everything right now. So there's that. He also does an impressive job, but just gets totally overshadowed by the bigger names. Like, I mean, Aaron Taylor Johnson's a pretty big damn name, but gets totally overshadowed by Bill Skarsgård and Nicholas Hoult. Very explicitly those two, and also to a certain degree Willem Dafoe's performances, partially because I think they all got a lot more screen time than he did, but also partially just because it's Nicholas Hoult and Lily Rose Depp and Bill Skarsgård and Willem Dafoe. Like, these are names that, I don't know, I feel like Aaron Taylor Johnson, while he still has a draw, he is definitely a name in and of himself. He's not quite to the same level as the other ones, for whatever reason. But yeah, absolutely loved it. I'm not going to go into the details, obviously, just because this is a real quick, we're going to talk about the thing. But yeah, so the other movie that I really dug that I have watched over the course of the last couple weeks, because we haven't really talked about this kind of stuff for that long, was Quiet Place. Quiet Place Day One. There it is. So this movie is now on, I think you can rent it on Prime. I think that's how we watched it. We had a couple of digital credits, so that's what all you really can do with your digital credits is rent movies or buy movies, I guess, if you have enough. So that's what we did, because I really, really dig the Quiet Place movies. I liked this movie. It is not as good as the first A Quiet Place movie, though, because of the... I don't want to say groundbreaking, because that's giving it a lot more credit than it probably deserves, but because of the unique nature of the horror elements of the first Quiet Place movie, I don't think any of the other movies in the franchise will be able to have the same impact and the same storytelling ability, like not the same draw. They won't be on the same level as that first one because of how unique it was. So the prequel to the first movie, being A Quiet Place Day One, was good. I liked it just as well as the second movie. Lupita Nyong'o is kind of always a win. Like, I feel like even when she's just doing the voice of Maz Kanata, still kind of always a win. I don't know that I've ever seen her in anything I was like, she did okay. She's always got, and she dropped an incredible amount of weight for this, and it shows. Like, there's some behind the scenes stuff. If you watch it, there's some behind the scenes stuff you can watch as well. I would suggest you watch that afterwards, because it's really, really cool. But like, I watching the movie, I was like, this is like, she looks like she's got, her character has cancer in the show, so, or in the movie, so she lost the weight to kind of get more in the headspace of somebody who has that disease. And I wasn't sure if she's just, you know, because it's a thing. Actresses in Hollywood, especially female actresses, actors, whatever, go through phases, go through body phases. Sometimes they put on weight, sometimes they lose weight. It's their personal lives. I generally don't care, as long as they're not hurting themselves. It is what it is. So I was curious as to why she seemed smaller than the last time I remember seeing her in a movie, which I think was This Is Us, rather. This Is Us is a totally different TV show, actually. So yeah, when I watched the behind the scenes stuff afterwards, it was like, oh yeah, she lost, I think it was like something like 30 pounds to play this role, and that is insane because she's not a very big person to begin with. So you get a lot more of a look at the monsters in this movie, which I think is one of the biggest reasons why the first movie was so impactful, was because they reserved those shots. You didn't see too much of the monsters, which is usually the way to go when you're doing monster horror. As evidenced by what was that stupid monster movie? And then John Goodman was in that weird sequel that barely had anything to do with it. I can't even think of it right now. Whatever. Cloverfield, that's the one. Yeah, as evidenced by Cloverfield. If you watch Cloverfield, they show you way too much of that monster, and it totally kills it. So in Quiet Place Day One, you see a lot of the monsters, but I think it works on a different level. Like, obviously, being intimately familiar with the monsters' faces kind of lessens the impact of when you see them, because you see them a lot. But it shows you the way these creatures interact with one another, because you see so many of them. It shows you the way these creatures kind of interact with their environment a lot more, because you see so many of them. In the first movie, I think you see one creature with any sort of significance. And in the second movie, you get a little bit more. But the first movie, there is a significant... And then the second movie, you see a glimpse of Day One in the area of the world that those people live in, which I can't remember off the top of my head right now either. But Quiet Place Day One, the movie, takes place in New York City. And, yeah, is definitely worth a watch. Like, absolutely worth a watch. If you have a couple of credits queued up on your Amazon Prime digital credits, this is for sure worth a rent. I would say, even just because I really dig the universe, Quiet Place Day One is worth a buy. So there's that. You have to be into creature horror, though. Then the other movie, and this one we're going to spend a little bit of time on, because, oh boy, The Substance. Everyone is just talking about how really great this movie is. So I finally found a way to watch it, and it is not. I think the first person I know of me and my girlfriend both, I guess, that has this take on it. But the first person I know of that is putting a review out of this movie, I don't think this movie is as great as it's being billed. I think that a lot of people are liking this movie because they think they have to. Because it takes a lot of doing to watch this movie, because Mubi is not exactly a streaming service that many people have. So you're borrowing somebody's login information, you're doing the 7-day free trial, you're sailing the seven seas, whatever you got to do to see this. Or maybe you were lucky enough to see it in theaters, because I definitely was not lucky enough to see it in theaters. And I say that just because that's the phrase, but I don't think luck had anything to do with this. All right, so I have issues with The Substance. Let's start with the billing of this as a body horror movie. Sure, there is an element of body horror. And also, sure, and not to give away too much, as you get deeper into the movie, especially into the last act, the climax of the last act, you get a decent dose of the body horror there. But for a vast majority of this movie, the horror comes in the psychology. And even then, there's so many caveats here, even at that point, I still... don't necessarily like calling this horror exactly. Thriller, perhaps. Body thriller. I don't know. That doesn't roll off the tongue quite the same. But the reason I say that is because you have the horror elements in the beginning of the movie, because it jumps right into it. Like, if you're expecting this to be a bit of a slow burn in any way, then you're not coming into the right movie. This jumps into the action very, very quickly. We establish who the character of Elizabeth Sparkle is. That's Demi Moore's character. We establish her as something of a washed up, a Hollywood presence. And I think it's also misleading to try and draw some sort of weird parallel between what's going on here and what actually happens in Hollywood, because, like, the scenario they create for her, she's a washed up fitness guru who somehow also got a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. And, like, so maybe she, I guess, no, I take that back. That does establish that she was an actor in her youth. And then as she got older, she got into this fitness thing. But then it kind of does this weird switch on you, because when she becomes the younger version, that's, you know, I feel like I'm not really spoiling anything at this point, because that's kind of the premise of this movie. Is you're chasing youth, and this substance literally helps you become younger. So when she becomes the younger version of herself, she doesn't go for acting. She goes for more exercise. She's a fitness guru as her younger self again. I forget what she calls herself when she becomes young, but it jumps right into it. So you get the establishment, then you get the horror turn within like the first 5 minutes or so, eight minutes even. So you're like, oh, cool, we're jumping into this. We're going to get a lot of the horror elements of this, a lot of the body horror, because that's, again, everybody's, it's a body horror movie. It's a crazy body horror movie. I had somebody at work tell me they weren't ready to see what happened in this movie. And it's like, I don't know if we watched the same movie. But again, within the first 8 minutes or so, you have this expectation. Oh, we jumped right into the body horror. Let's see where this goes. Like, it definitely hooks you super, super well. You have the character of the agent played by Dennis Quaid. He does and that is my next issue, but we'll get there. He does an interesting job. But so as she becomes younger, she's just doing the fitness stuff. And really, how famous do fitness influencers, even in today's society where influencers are kind of everything, like, how famous are they in terms of Hollywood? Like, it just there's such, it's a weird expectation for your suspension of disbelief. Margaret Qualley is the younger version of Demi Moore's character. And then let's talk about the Dennis Quaid situation. So, and because it factors with the three of them, we have Dennis Quaid being an absolute caricature of every horrible negative stereotype that you can think of when it comes to male Hollywood straight white producer. Like, that is what Dennis Quaid is doing 100%, and he does it well, and it's over the top. He is being so animated and just insane, and like the camera choice, or the shot choices that the director makes, Coralie Farjeet, the lens choices that she makes, like, a lot of the first parts of this movie are shot stupid wide, like 8 millimeters wide, like fisheye wide. And it kind of adds to that caricature element of Dennis Quaid's character. It also makes you think that they're trying to do that as some sort of statement, that this whole movie is supposed to be over the top. But then you get Demi Moore's performance, and I don't know if she can be a caricature in the same way that Dennis Quaid can really just do whatever the hell Dennis Quaid wants, because he's a fantastic actor. Demi Moore is in a completely different movie than I think 70 to 80% of the rest of this cast are in. And really, the cast largely is just these three people. I'm talking more about the peripheral characters as well, but largely it's just these three characters that we're really dealing with. And then Margaret Qualley, her performance is, I think, still playing into, because obviously Dennis Quaid is there for comic relief. Like, he's there to be ridiculous and like, oh my God, what is this guy saying? What is this guy doing? How the hell? He's so disgusting. Like, it's dark comic, but it's still, I think, to a certain level, comic relief. Margaret Qualley, I think she wants to be in the same movie that Dennis Quaid is in. So she's also playing for a kind of sort of comic level performance in this horror movie. Coppola. I don't know if it's inexperience, if it's bad directing. I don't know exactly where it is, but it doesn't quite follow through. Maybe if Demi Moore had gotten the notice that this is, at least to some degree, a comedy, dark horror comedy, body, whatever. And even looking at the picture on my screen right now, none of this says comedy. Like, I don't know, it's just it just wasn't what it was billed as. There is the interplay between the old version of Demi Moore's character, Elizabeth Sparkle, old version of the character, young version of the character. There's that interplay. There's the psychology involved with trying to chase youth forever and this whole culture. Like, yeah, I see that. I feel like a lot of the points that the director is trying to make fall a little flat, but I see what she's trying for, and it's very obvious that she's trying to make something deep, even if she's not really succeeding very well. Like, it's the context is there. But by the end of the movie, when you actually do get body horror elements on a level that you were expecting 30, 40 minutes previous, you don't care anymore, because like this, there's a lot of this movie was just kind of an excuse to ogle, Margaret Qualley and all of the people around, all of the like other dancers around her. Like, it's the weird, the male gaze, the weird argument against the male gaze and how that conflicts with a modern interpretation of female empowerment. Because I did not see anything empowering about 90% of the male gazey things that, Margaret Qualley was doing. Some of the stuff didn't feel as male gazy, and I really hate using that as a term, but here we are. Even though like it still it involved naked bodies, I didn't feel as male gazy because it felt intentional. It felt like this is how the story needed to be told in those very specific moments, and there are very few of them. The rest of it is just like it's psychological, and I don't know. I didn't like it. I understood what was going on. So anyone who comments on this afterwards that just says you just didn't understand it, no, I fully understood what they were trying for. I fully understood what they build this movie as, and those two things are not compatible. They're not the same. So, like, it was entertaining. I'm not saying I hated it. I'm just saying I didn't really enjoy it. It was not a horror. You want to see really, really good body horror. You want to see insane, like, going to haunt your dreams for the next 3 months style body horror, go watch Color Out of Space with Nicolas Cage. That movie will mess your brain up. This movie, it will be something to watch for in about 90 minutes. Like that's the best I can do for suggesting to see The Substance. Oh, now that I've gone on a what was that, like a 20 minute rant. Yeah, I have dinner to eat, and then we will be back. I'll try and shove it in my face real quick. So this is though where the regular stream ends, and the gaming stream will begin in about 10 to 15 minutes. So anyone who sticks around, I appreciate you. Thank you very much. Otherwise, we will see all of you who are listening in post later. Well, next week should be again this same schedule. Like I said, we're going to be doing this until February. So the week after Valentine's Day will be when we kick back into regular news shows. Oh, before I forget, good Lord, I can't believe I did this. Let's change scenes and do the thing. I have to talk about the Dubby, because Dubby is channel partners. Dubby.gg is the website. That is the place to go get your caffeine needs, energy drinks specifically, not even just caffeine. They have hydration drinks as well. Mix the two. It's actually pretty yummy. I have honestly been more recently mixing my energy drinks with my protein shakes when I go to the gym. Put a little bit of energy powder. We have some water soluble, sugar drink style protein powder. I do a scoop of the protein powder, and I do two scoops, depending on which bottle I'm using, of the energy powder, and it's really good stuff. So, I mean, we've talked a number of times about how unique W is and that it's lower in caffeine, but still helps you better than most energy drinks in the neural function arena, because it has the nootropics that they put in there that help you focus, help you stay on task. If you're somebody like me who is who has unmedicated ADHD, it definitely helps a lot with my focus when I'm at the day job and stuff. So it's pretty great. I'm super excited that W has partnered with the channel, and they have a code you can use, Generally Nerdy, at checkout, get you 10% off of your purchase, and it gives me a little bit of a kickback as well. So don't forget to go check out w.gg, get your energy drink needs, use code Generally Nerdy at checkout, and help out the channel that way. All of that being said, we'll get the W off the screen now. All of that being said, thank you very much, nerds, for joining me. Once again, we will be returning in a few minutes with the gaming portion of the stream. And until then, thank you. We'll see you in the next one. Before we go, always, always remember that if it's generally nerdy, it's probably here.